nothing like possible. I'm not sure if you can tell these drugs are underestimating or overestimating. I just don't know if you're a hard call. Some contamination is just been a major issue. And we've got different problems too. We just try to get around that again. How do you get a better surface? You screen that up.
Scale from zero, very little to
But that's what John produces. He produces
this is a probability of perception bound in this right part of how we want to operate in the
there's also a plus 3.
I'm sorry.
Go to adjudication.
Yes,
they're all done. So any positive means trivial.
Every case, issued non-issue. Little admission, big admission, positive admission. Every case goes to adjudication.
When you send them, do you drop the base rate data as to how many are serious matters with intent to destroy, or non serious ones. You already know that. You have probably accuracy, but you do know. Correct?
It's retrieval.
Well, that's really important for us. That is, they don't know, they have some measure of it, but the measure that may come out of the adjudication process
could be
different.
That could be, but they know when they send them.
What adjudication?
Which ones they think
right.
are important, and which ones they think yeah. are important. Correct?
I hate to use that terminology.
Well,
everyone is important. and no matter what it is.
Which one there was intent for the harm of the United States?
We could tell you what that admission was. It's like we pulled all of those files and what you were doing. You would be asked. Everyone, us two soldiers, representing Doug Hakeley, here from our adjudication branch.
He's representing Hakeley. We need to talk to him.
I have been told, but I think I should do it to Mr. Stover, that I've been told that the two of us
people have increased on the adjudication here.
Yeah, because we still have other things. So we're on the agenda to try to get as much of what we said was first day covered, and we'll carry everything over, and are going to go into closed session.
You're welcome. All of the visitors are welcome to coffee. And
stick through the agenda as laid out. And I think it's probably worthwhile trying to continue with the related issues. We had Kathy to do at least something brief on the links between the studies we've just discussed and all the other ones. But Rich wanted to take a few minutes and actually articulate the discussion that we were having. And so why don't we do that first, then we'll turn to Kathy, and then we'll see which things to pick up on. And the committee will continue the other discussions, obviously. The one I think I'd like to try to touch on, if we can, is the cancer measure.
The question is what the result is of training for consistency, which can be desirable in many situations, but in the present situation could have some problems. Do you want me to raise this for thinking purposes? Let's say in the various tracings, there's 10 aspects, 10 dimensions of the tracings that are relevant for decision making. And let's say that the Bayesian sort of optimal solution that maximizes the probability correct or D prime, or however you want to define it, is an equal weighting of all these. And then we don't know, of course, nobody knows what the correct weighting of these dimensions is to maximize performance. So it may be some individual examiner would weight these, more highly than more those. Another examiner might do these and so on. Now, if they each do their thing separately, the group, if they're randomly distributed across these dimensions, will approximate the optimal solution in their group behavior, even if every individual one is not doing so well. But if you train them all, if everybody's trained to do the same thing, they don't know what's right, maybe this is the one who's trained, but everybody does that. And then we're guaranteed to be so there's a possible danger in trying for consistency when you don't really know what the right way to use the weight in different dimensions in your decision at the bottom. Anyway, that's the point.
But we also don't know that the average across all of them is right either.
No, but I think you're more likely, you're right, but you're more likely
so
in a random situation like this, probably approximately treat, then your reason is here you're not correlating the error, and here you are correlating the error. So you, on the average, you're going to be better off doing it this way.
Well,
okay.
I think that you're on the average. I don't know. I think we can break down a model in which you're better doing it that way, or you're better training consistently. But the point is that if people are consistent with each other, you will have a low variance estimate. Are a low, but not necessarily a low mean squared error estimate. And people tend to trust low variance estimates, whether or not they're mean squared error. And so you end up having the biggest danger, I think, is false confidence from the consistency.
There are some other advantages of standardization. I mean, if things are standardized, it's easier to collect them sort of off. And that's actually relevant for us, too. So in some medical context, it's been noted, like, if you standardize what you're doing, you can learn better from your experience. However, the problem is that, you can't make progress. In fact, you need to get variations to make progress. But for just kind of understanding what you're doing, standardization is good.
Isn't the case that polygraph examiners believe that there are specific things that you should look for? I'm just trying to explain why they are peaking to get high inter-rater agreement. It would be cause, they believe there are specific, which everybody's looking for, and waiting in the same way. And so what they're doing is perfectly logical, given their initial assumption.
Just to depersonalize that, the same thing we said about radio.
I just listened to John's first talk today, maybe before that.
Some guests with us who were not here earlier, and we've been asking people to identify themselves so that we know who's with us.
I'm Dr. Nash Thompson, working with Dr. Larry Carwell. My finger.
Jerry Carwell. I'm not involved actually in the infectious discussion, but I am involved in the discussion with the
open the floor for discussion. is what relevance should those studies have? The GAO studies conclude, they basically concluded that their conclusions did not apply to polygraphs for screening, and they basically drew no conclusions about polygraphs for screening. And my question that I want to throw out to the floor is, are those studies completely irrelevant, or do they have something to say about that we should be paying attention to? Obviously the situation is different, but there is in fact a particular incident of any death that you're looking for specifically from the polygraph. And so there's a more clear right or wrong answer that is more that we know what we're looking for is not a fishing expedition. So in some sense, both the definition of validity and the ability to tell whether we are right or wrong, the ability to have a ground truth at least in our mind, even if we don't know it, it's easier in specifically than a polygraph. So one argument is that the studies are relevant in the sense that the worst case for screening is essentially the best case for specific incidents. That we can't be worse than specific incidents, so we should look at that literature as being a lower bound on what we can do. So that's one argument that has been put forward, and I would like to ask for people's reactions to that. And do you feel that's so? The best case for us is
thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can't do any.
I was about to.
We can't do any better. Yes, I'm sorry.
We can't really.
I hate to do that. I don't know. I hate to do that.
includes all kinds. It's over 140 screens. Don't look very different than what we just showed you on the 6 or 8 screening sessions. And in fact, the screening studies are no longer. They're probably identical. I doubt that.
I think it was a common screening place that would be better.
But that's not, there's no
screen. I mean, an urban setting.
The screen, right. But there's a lot of non-comparable about the chicken. I mean, that's something that we really need to keep in mind.
The screening studies, that, but the one thing is that you would expect that screening studies are looking for something in a class or two. So you're looking, did I commit an advanced in some class, which is a more difficult, maybe, it's a different kind of psychological construct than I commit this specific.
But you also accept the bleeding across.
Exactly.
And so you change it, and those are compensating.
Let me pick up on that for a second, because this is going on in some of our email discussions. I don't think that we can be finally drawn as this, and I detect the possibility, for example, of throwing out saying, well, specific instance studies aren't part of our clergy. But in my mind, they are. What about specific instance screening studies? For example, 10 tapes disappear at Los Alamos. You don't know where they went. So you conduct limited polygraph screening of 100 employees who might have had access to those tapes to see which one knows where the tapes went. Now that's a specific incident, but it's also screening. And it has all the characteristics of a specific incident in the process of screening. So I have interpreted that.
I wouldn't consider it screening.
Because you have no indication for the individuals that you subject to the test. You have no indication whatsoever that this involves anything wrong. You are simply doing a population survey to try to find a connection. There's nothing to confront them with. There's no database for that. You're simply looking around the population to find some sort of.
But the difference is that you really believe that one of them.
You don't even know that.
No, but there is a specific.
One is screen for behavior, one is screen for.
Right.
I think we have to draw a finer distinction with that, and I think that, but your point is well taken, is it may not be a sharp demarcation between what's specific incident and what's screening. But there are specific incidents in, say, a criminal investigation where we are only polygraphing the people that we, say, have enough evidence on them to search for. But we actually have reason to believe that this particular individual may have committed this particular offense. Then there's a specific incident, which an incident has occurred, and there's some large population of people, none of whom is individually under suspicion for any reason, that it had to be somebody in that group, so we go through them all. But that's still specific incident. And then there are also gradations between those two. And then there's the case where we don't have a particular event in mind. We don't know whether espionage has been committed or not. We don't know whether classified materials have been taken home or not. We don't know whether anybody told things they shouldn't have to their friends or neighbors. And we're just asking people questions in the hope of identifying things that we would like to know about. And that's a different issue.
I think I've been interpreting our charge as including whatever you call it, the kind of survey or association with the problem that I described in the presentation. So if you're calling that specific incident, and if that means it's not within our scope, then I think we have to look back at our scope, because I've been assuming that sort of investigation would be within our scope. It's like it's a broad investigation of people who are not otherwise suspect, which simply is looking for. I don't see a clear distinction between that and screening.
I think we can choose to put it in our scope or not, depending on later on how we think it's related.
I think that the objections of people like the anti-polygraph or those people are primarily towards the crimes that are done, say, as a team. When there's nothing to suspect anybody of necessarily, we're just doing this routinely on all of our employees and people like lose their jobs on account of it. If there has been something that happened that's extremely serious, and we are trying to identify the culprit. That's a difference between a polygraph and it is my understanding, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, that
who refused to submit could have reasonably expected to face some serious adverse employment consequences as a result of that refusal.
You consider that in the same category as the routine every five year screening?
It's the key distinction that I think should be made between the screening and specific incident is that one, a crime is known to have occurred, and the other, it has. Otherwise, the same set of assumptions is essentially the same, that the truthful will respond differentially to the control question as opposed to the relevant.
There are a couple of observations. One is, from the examiner's standpoint, one might be different from the other, but I know in our team in St. Louis, when we're talking about it, they say, make sure you think through the practice violation you did, so you have to think through the behavior. But from the examinee's standpoint, if I visited the Russian embassy, that behavior, and now from the examiner's standpoint, he might be fishing, he might be fishing, but I'm not, I did something or didn't do something that's concrete, and that's doing the specific incident versus the screening. And the second point is, if you look at the research, these guys are reading people through an espionage activity, they're stealing gifts, and then the research is being done to examine it, versus a hunt type boy or studying to just steal a wallet. So from the research perspective, again, the examinee sees it as a specific incident, even if the examiner sees it as screen deficient. I'm not even sure that in the stuff that Dockpile is doing, it really is screening. I think that they're being told some of these people are guilty of something, and some they're not. You have to run through it all, and the idea is, can you find it? And so there doesn't seem to be, in the basic research, a specific incident component to it. And always, I think, from the examinee's perspective, that's true.
Well, wait, from the examinee's perspective, that's true if the examinee is
missing. I think it's somewhat fuzzy distinction. In the typical screening situation, you have a class exemption, but you don't know this person. So you don't know if they ask somebody about espionage, but who they might have committed or how often. In the specific incident, you know an incident, whether it's the missing artists or if the murder that's occurred, you know there's an incident. That's quite separate from the other issue of the typical field situation. Incident, it's a small number of people on a high base rate. While the field situation for the screening, it's a large number of people, it's the lowest. There's a number of ways in which they're different, but you're always looking for behavior. So I think maybe before you say, well, they're always behaviors that are possible. It's not non-behavior, it's something that somebody did or didn't do.
I'm just trying to give you an example of what you're saying. But let me add this. In the screening process, which I'll observe from, and this is more of a question than a question, we begin with multiple issues, looking at the class and the behavior. So if something is identified, we might agree that something that exists.
Then it's straight into investigate that into.
Of course, it's particularly funny though that if the guilty is excluded across the text, and what the response will show up on may not be anything to do with what really causing the guilt, but there may be another explanation or intention about something that actually isn't causing the response.
To get back to the original question, what is the relevance and the issue of does this represent the best case of the worst case? I think it depends. If you different problem. So I don't think it's fair to say this is the best we can do, because we have this kind of moderating variable of expectancy that I think is good.
Initially, it was played earlier, but also played relevant to Jim's point. In the kernel context, it's even worse.
Yeah.
The autograph operators not only expect high base rates, but they're often told about information.
Yeah.
This guy was caught with stereo equipment, and now we want to run the polygraph. But then also that's relevant to the screening context, to the extent that the polygrapher has information and has certain expectations, and so I'm not deficient of the pure part of the pond, rather than deficient all around the pond. And that's also my greatest expected information.
If they
check
the
one
part of each, another point is the very definition of validity, that suppose that I may test positive, and I may not be sure why I tested positive. And then I dig up an incident because that matches it, or somebody else might test negative who has committed that same offense but hasn't encoded it in the offense and doesn't react, and it's not clear necessarily which
event is actually
I'm talking about as a statistician trying to define what validity is.
I understand that. But perceived base rates may have nothing to do with validity.
No, I'd say perceived base rates are one issue.
Yeah.
Definition
okay.
of validity,
yeah.
Definition of what is a correct response or an incorrect response.
Absolutely.
It may be completely unverifiable.
Okay.
Several points. I think I agree with Andy and the majority that Peter essentially is a criminal subject. It's not unlike my own car robbery where you interview everybody connected in the armored car, talking to a bank burglar who's wearing a polygraph all the time in college. I think clearly a criminal specific incident is one where a known incident has occurred. The only issue is you're using the paradigm of the folks within the paradigm of the car relevant questions to determine whether or not there's an association as a perpetrator, as a co-conspirator, as a witness, and so forth. A screening example. As a fishing expedition, you're asking large numbers of people about issues, none of which are going to occur with varying base rates or sometimes very low base rates. But there's more practical considerations than just that theoretical description. And it goes beyond differences in base rates, and it's why I don't think that you can lump these things together. One of the big differences is the differences between the codes, and it's reflected in the opinions of some experts, for instance, Charles Hans. Opponent of criminal specific testing, but very much an opponent of screening testing. And I would, although Charles Hans and I would disagree about much, I would agree with him about this. The distinctions between control and relevant questions evaporate for screening. And criminal specific testing, they're set up so that they're separated by time. One couldn't possibly be the other, but that's not true with screening. There are additional problems with screening, additional mindset issues with both the examiner and the examinee.
So, what does it mean to do screening of 500 FBI employees because this is part of the FBI?
I wish I could answer that question.
Which kind of test is that?
That's a limited screening application of 5.5% of FBI agents. I'm not in a position to comment about the appropriateness of that for the asking in 5 weeks.
whatever we call it, the consequence of the source of my bringing this up was the fact that we have rather focused, we have a specific item of this view of screening stuff. There is a larger literature on the incidents that we have. And as I read our chart, I just want to make sure we know what our charge is. Our charge is to present the recommendations for polygraph examinations for personal security.
later on that same page, it says screening device or procedure. And in terms of deliverables, it says polygraph for personal security.
So, Walker said that earlier, I think, first.
Yeah. So, it's security is the issue, but it could be either specific incident or screening. It's not telling us one or the other. It's outside of our question.
Given that that's the case, should we be adding or doing anything different than we do now?
I think we clearly do need to look at the. We do need to look at the studies, but all the studies in the literature.
That was the clear issue that I seemed to me that we had to come to grips with at this meeting, so that when we get to the next one, we pay attention to it in the series.